Okay, here we go. Hour number two. Lots going on, of course. How could anything else be the case when a planet is being at least partially genocided? It's a big story, and still so very few, if any, of the main lights and voices who are talking about this, the scientists, the doctors, the professional healthcare workers, they will not stop calling this a failed vaccine or a vaccination or a whatever, genetic, this or that. It's a death weapon. It was designed brilliantly to do more in more ways than I think most anyone in the field even understands sometimes. I just get the idea they don't have a real handle on the whole thing. The dynamics of it, the panorama of it, the multifaceted ways it goes about destroying the body from the blood and the immune system right on down the line from A to Z. This thing was really put together like nothing I've ever come across. And I'm not a health professional or a scientist, but I'm not dumb. And thanks to Erica, and I've been involved with this now for almost 3 years, and we have presented, I think, the best overall look at this very complex situation that you can find anywhere. I don't think anyone can match it. And I'm not bragging, I'm just telling you straight. Because I look at a lot of these people. And we have a couple people tonight. We have a little bit more from Pierre Corey, and then Dr. William Mackus will be back with us via video, and a lot of really interesting comments and some conversation upcoming. Are you there, kid?
I'm here, Jeff.
This
We're
is just a
halfway
young,
there.
another, yes, another raucous week. It's not slowing down any. Who
No.
do you think, honestly, now, did what I just say make sense? I really think some of these people, as extraordinary as some of them are, really don't seem to be, either they don't get it or they don't want to go there in conversation, which is probable. They don't want to be threatened. They don't want to get hassled anymore by state and national medical boards and all that, their licenses. And I get that. But I still have the feeling that, honestly, some of them just, they haven't gone to the lengths that they might have if they really want to look at this for what it is, which is an absolutely hideously awesome, wicked military weapon. It's a military weapon. That's my take at this point.
Well, you and I are on the same page. I've suspected that right from the very beginning. You know, when, I don't know, what was it, 2, 3 weeks into the lockdowns, Bill Gates appears on the scene saying that we're going to need a vaccine to get back to normal. That gave it away, for me anyway.
Sure did. No, that was in your face, that one.
Yeah, but apparently not for everybody. No, I think some of these high-profile docs are walking a fine line. They don't know, necessarily want to make these accusations without having firm evidence to back them up. And secondarily, I think they don't want to alienate those who have taken this shot. You know, because if you start talking
I
like that
agree.
right out of the gate, you're going to lose your audience.
All true. But we're not worried about that because this audience is not going to run. Nothing's going to drive these people. Our listeners, you good people out there, really want to know, to the best of our ability to help you see it, and your own research, and some of you are terrific researchers. You want to know what the hell's going on. And you have a God-given right to know. Of course, this government, this communist Bolshevik Zionist government, this dictatorship, doesn't view God as in any way peremptory to its jurisdiction. So, good luck. Crazy. Now, I don't know. I can't go into detail on this, but I'm getting a report or two that when people are in the hospital, they are being given booster shots with or without their full consciousness being present. It's happening. And no matter how sickly they are, they're being given the shot on the basic pretext that get the shot and you won't get COVID and get worse, whatever they're in there for. So they are giving people in the hospital these injections, these kill shots.
Well,
And
yeah, I
it's
heard a
crazy.
story. A friend of a friend was she had taken two shots early on, and I believe she stopped at 2. I don't think she went beyond 2. Uh-huh. Anyway, she was recently diagnosed with breast cancer. And her oncologist told her that she should get the booster and an RSV shot to protect herself.
And, hurrying her right along to the mortuary.
Yeah, it's absolutely incredible. So my friend, who knows her, I don't know this woman personally, but my friend approached me in a panic, asking, you know, what kind of material we could give her to persuade her not to take these shots. Of course, now there's plenty of evidence. I don't know, though, that, you know, unless these people are willing to hear it, you know, what's the story there? When the student is ready, the teacher will appear. And
right. See, we're
I don't
raised
know. I think
it,
the brainwashing is so thorough.
Starts. It's well, we are raised, brainwashed, since the first time we're able to look and cognitively grasp what the situation is around us and begin to take in data and process it. We're brainwashed to trust the government and above all to trust the medical establishment. You get sick, you instantly, got to go to the doctor. And it used to be the doctors made house calls. They actually did. They'd come right to your home. No more.
Yeah,
if you look on eBay, you can find house call doctors, leather. They had a black leather bag they'd always bring, full of whatever. You know, some painkillers and antibiotics and things like that. And they make a house call. And they don't do that anymore. And so,
well, what's sad is... you know, veterinary medicine is going in the same direction.
Oh, I don't start me on that. That's really a sad situation.
You know, they are literally starting to prescribe, they have for a few years. I've noticed this a few years already now. Pharmaceutical medications, all kinds of, yes. You know, depending on what the situation is, painkillers.
Yes.
Which,
yes.
You know, of course, you don't want your animal to be in pain, but muscle relaxants, God, there was a whole shopping
sounds
bag
like,
of stuff I came home with one time, and I really didn't want the stuff, mm-hmm. And I never used the stuff. I just couldn't believe it.
It sounds like my dinner tonight. Just kidding.
Pills?
Just kidding. No, it's true. The merging of veterinary medicine and human medicine is moving. They're moving together. They're not going to overlap necessarily, but they're certainly following the same general pathway. And I think a lot of these people actually major in billing in vet school or medical school. I get that impression. Well, each patient, you get 7 minutes. That's it. And they get billed $250 for an office, whatever it is now. I don't know.
Well,
it's
they're
horrible.
Also incentivized to write prescriptions and do procedures.
And
that's
do what?
They make
I missed
their
that.
Money.
You dropped out. What?
They are also incentivized to write prescriptions and do procedures.
Course. Yes, the pen has replaced the stethoscope. Yes.
Yep.
Well, soon AI medicine will be in every office and every treatment room, and the doctor or a nurse assistant will stand there and type in the results of whatever they're inputting, and the AI will spit back maybe not there on the spot, but when the doctor goes back in his office, he'll have a range of things that he can ascribe to the patient or the visitor, tell him, yeah, you got this, that, the other thing, and what to fill out in terms of the pharmacy. It's where it's going. They want to get rid of doctors to a degree.
Yes.
They want it to go to AI, digital medicine. That's where it's
They're
going.
Already doing robotic surgeries. In this hysterectomy, uterine endometrial cancer group, you know, a lot of these women have had hysterectomies, among other surgical procedures, and it's being done robotically.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So you go to sleep and get knocked out or whatever, and there's some robot arms that go to work. It's not human.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's really hard to believe.
I know.
Wow.
I don't know if there's
isn't
a human at the controls, but the surgeon is not using his own hands.
Well, I've read that they're supposedly at the controls, but I don't know.
Well, at some point, you know, that may go away too.
Yes.
If it hasn't already, I haven't been in an operating room lately.
Me neither.
Let's keep it that way.
I try to stay away. It's a little bit habituating, but, you know, do your best. Okay, let's jump back in here. We have a lot of material. We've been visiting with the FLCCC weekly update of November 1st, and we have a little bit more material to bring you from that is worthy of a listen. Pierre Corey is going to speak. The moderator is asking a question. Her name is?
Betsy Ashton.
All right, and here we go.
You talked about really not knowing how long it takes for the shedding to stop, but this really bothers people. They want to know, you know, how long after the vaccine should you stop being around people? I mean, I will tell you that where I live, they're giving out the vaccine tomorrow. So do I want to stay away from everybody for a while or what?
You know, there's only so much that we know about who around us is vaccinated. But if you know that someone was vaccinated and you can in any way, shape or form avoid being around them for at least 2 weeks, I would. For your own well-being.
Does the shedding ever stop? Ever from or we don't
no, we
have a clue.
We don't know. It probably decreases with time, but we don't know.
Yep.
That was Dr. Paul Merrick chipping in there correctly. We don't know, and until we do know, we have to assume that people who have been injected are still shedding. That's the safe way to do it.
Well, don't forget, Lori, who we had on the program, was it last Friday?
I think so.
The two women, the mother-daughter that she gave the 15-minute car ride to, had been previously vaxxed 2 months prior?
It's a number of weeks. I think that's right, 8 weeks. It wasn't just a few days ago or a week. It had been some time.
No. And she was nailed. And she's still paying the price for that.
Yeah. All right, here we go.
It's here that are really concerned about miscarriages. Is there any connection to shedding and recurrent miscarriages or an effect on DNA in the egg sperm?
Don't know and don't know.
Okay, someone asks, says, have you looked into berberine as a preventive treatment? Multiple papers on PubMed are regarding this. I happened to come across this as I was taking 400 milligrams twice a day of berberine for
Betsy. Yes. It's on the iPrevent protocol.
I know it is. I know. But I guess they're wanting to know, you know, how good is it for this, or, you know?
They're wanting to be told it works. That's what people are always after. Does it work? All right, berberine, that's a new one on me. What do you know about berberine?
Basically, it's used to control blood sugar. It's an herb. You can buy it in capsules. If you take it as a powder, you open the capsule and take it as a powder, it is one of the most bitter things. And it will stay in your mouth But anyway, it's very good at controlling blood sugar if that's an issue. And now, I guess, apparently somewhat useful for battling this spike protein.
Okay, very good. All right, here we go.
We don't know. I mean, listen, that iPrevent protocol, I mean, we're starved for data, good studies, and research. We are doing what's been done for hundreds of years in medicine, is knowledge of pathophysiology, pharmacology, mechanisms. We're using assessment of safety of these interventions with the potential benefits, and we're doing a risk-benefit and mechanistic physiologic approach. And we've offered, led by Paul, we've come up with a list of compounds, nutraceuticals that we know are safe and would likely have benefit. We have not been able to measure that. There's no prospective study that we've done or even retrospective where we can compare those on the iPrevent protocol with those who haven't. We're making just what we think are sound clinical recommendations, but they're not based on clinical data on impacts on outcomes. But we believe that they're safe and they would likely be helpful. And it's good to take precautions, right? You don't want to find out later that you did nothing and now you're at increased risk of some sort of pathology in the future.
Here's a question. I'm curious if shedding can affect my immune system like it does for those who got the shots. My husband is getting sick more often than he used to, and I'm noticing lately that I am too. Before the shots came out, I really got sick. Diminished immune system?
Well, I would say that I see that in patients. I mean, I see that in long-haul patients who I think have been impacted by shedding. I mean, if someone cornered me in an elevator and said, what do you do for a living and what's it about, at the base, I would say it's an autoimmune dysregulation. That's kind of the foundation, right? So short answer is yes.
Yeah.
And a viewer wants to know, what about the plasmid DNA contamination and shedding? Do you have any view on that?
So let me step back for a second, because I'm just going to be open and honest here. So we knew we were going to address this topic. And yes, I've been deeply researched. And we've found some really concerning evidence and data for concern. But I would say for everything that we've discovered, it leads to just immense amounts of questions that we cannot really answer. And that is a major question that I want to ask, that I would love someone to answer. And as of right now, if anyone watched our webinar with Jessica Rose a week or two ago, those questions are starting to be answered. From what I understand, there's an effort to test to see whether these plasmids have capacity of integrating into the genome. The second question is, can they be shed? I believe that if the plasmids are in there, based on their size, they can be enclosed in lipid nanoparticles and likely be excreted and absorbed. But whether they're still capable of integration and what the risks of that are, I mean, I have hundreds of questions on that. So I wish I could answer them. I would just say, just put it on the list of things we're concerned about.
And that we need research about.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Here's someone who says, I had the virus 3 weeks ago. So do you think my natural immunity now is high enough to block other people's shedding at this time? If you know, if you can guess.
Depends which spike protein they're shedding. Did they get the first version, the second version, the third version? You know, that's actually a cool question. I like that question, whether, you know, because you're recently covered, you probably, your spike antibodies or SARS-CoV-2 antibodies are high, and would that offer some protection? And I don't know, Paul?
Possibly, maybe? I would say yes, maybe, but we don't know.
Yeah.
Here's a question about the cancer. Have you seen a case of turbo cancer go into remission? And does the exposure of someone sick or vaccinated activate something to cause the cancer to go out of control?
Well, so that's an easier one. We're not oncologists. In our patient population, I'll speak, Scott, maybe I have not had.
I haven't.
Who's had cancer yet. So, I'm drowning and surrounded by clinical anecdotes that my ever-widening network of colleagues and contacts will report. This one has turbo cancer, that one. I don't know what the clinical impacts are, how they're being treated, or of a success story. So, but that's just a no answer. I don't know. I kind of would be really interested. Paul, the big brain there, wrote the big book on repurposed drugs for cancer. I know a lot of those drugs, and I'd be very happy to use them. And I'd be really happy to start trying as an adjunctive measure to maybe offering people repurposed drug regimens as an adjunct to whatever primary treatment they have. But that's not what we're doing. I just don't have any clinical experience to say.
I think
I've had patients who have developed cancer while under my care, but not what I would call turbo cancers, and haven't seen anybody with turbo cancer recover. I just haven't had a patient with turbo cancer.
One of the Laura Chamberlain says, can you tell me what the name is of the test that you do for microclotting? Is it different than a D-dimer?
Yes. Yeah, so a D-dimer is measuring the fragments of what you would call macro, or what would have been a normal clot before the pandemic, right? But the amyloid fibrin microclots are very difficult to break down, and so you often won't see byproducts or breakdown products of it in the blood. So
there are no real available tests for amyloid clots. That's the answer.
Well, but not ones that
not
have
yet
been commercialized. You can get them through this Jordan Vaughn's.
There's a couple of places, three places, like you said.
The three that I know of. One is Jordan Vaughn's clinic, MedHelp in Birmingham, Alabama. The other one, I think I said it was Sloan Kettering. It's not. It's Mount Sinai in New York. Patino is the lab in at Mount Sinai, and then I'm not sure where the third one is, but I think you would have to be under the care of somebody who's doing long haul COVID care to be able to have access to that test.
I think you're right. If you look up on the homepage at rents.com and look on the right side, find the archive there, our archive, and look at the story that is up there. It's either number one or number two. Let me find out. It's number one. Microclots at the capillary level in the blood of vaxxed and many unvaxxed shedding victims. These amyloid clots can and will grow. Horror photos of results. Take a look at those pictures. Understand that microclotting occurs in everyone who's been vaxxed or injected, and probably the majority of those unvaxxed who have been working around or hanging around the vaxxed. That's the best we can come up with at this point. Can't say all of them, but we're seeing reports of unvaxxed people with identical blood profiles as the vaxxed have, which means they have been nailed. And in that blood are amyloid clots. You'll see the picture in there. They've been able to stain these amyloid microclots. They're little, tiny, different shapes of amyloid material that is growing at the capillary level. And from little, what is it? Little seeds, mighty oaks grow. And from those little,
yeah,
those little things, you'll see a three-foot-long clot pulled out of somebody's artery going up from their leg into their groin and further. So I look at all of these images in that picture as little seedlings or little sprouts. And if your blood is showing that, and they did go through a process to dye them so they were visible, they're kind of a Martian green, I would not sleep well at night with that. That's
interestingly, what they have determined is the people that are forming the amyloid clots, like these grade four, you know, the worst of the worst, tend to have a genetic mutation called PAI1, which stands for plasminogen activator inhibitor 1. So they don't tend to break down these clots as readily as people that don't have that mutation. So that's one of the tests that they will often run alongside this stain to determine if they're forming amyloid clots. And if you are unfortunate enough to have this genetic mutation, which a lot of people do, I think they want to put people on cholesterol-lowering medication on top of the triple therapy, which is the three different anticoagulants, antiplatelet medications. So that's the pharmaceutical approach to dealing with these, and it's moderately effective. I know at least one person who's done it, a couple people, I would say. The problem is when they stop, it isn't long before the clots begin to reform. So it looks like it's going to be a lifelong thing. at least in the vaxxed.
Right. And the idea of shedding, stopping, oh, I had COVID 3 weeks ago and I'm fine. I got over it in 4 or 5 days. Well, if you paid attention to what we've been offering, there are a number of indications now that you may feel like you're over the viral infection, but you're not. You're still dealing with it up to a couple of years later, I think was the one story. You're still showing
up to 2 years
results.
Yeah.
That's highly suggestive that you may be shedding for up to 2 years after you've recovered. And I would also suggest that the vaxxed certainly don't want to be shed upon. It's only going to bring them down to a lower threshold of trouble. They're already in trouble, whether they feel it or not.
Yeah, I have, since this latest shot rolled out back in September, right around the beginning of October, I began seeing a lot more reports in these injury support groups of people having an exacerbation of their symptoms. You know, they thought they were doing fine. They were doing fine. And all of a sudden, they're all suffering again and you know, with many of the same symptoms that they had before and some additional ones.
Right.
So, I you know, is that a natural progression of you know, relapsing with their own pathology? Or are they getting dosed with spike from people shedding?
I don't know how they couldn't be logically.
Right.
I don't know. I don't have the science to back it, but it makes sense. Nobody wants to be shed upon. Shedding is not good. All right. Now we're going to jump over to Dr. William Mackus. We're going to jump around a number of times in this interview. It's done by a woman named Tish Conlon. It's called Tish Talk, and she only has a little over 300 followers on her Rumble channel, but she does a nice job. William Mackus is, without question, I think, probably the most eloquent of all the medical and scientific professionals. No one's more eloquent than he is, the way he speaks, the way he uses words. He's a communicator. He's really something. The beginning clip will be having to do with Eliquis, blood thinning, and remember, we're not restricted to one kind of clot. A traditional blood platelet clot is going to be affected by Eliquis and other blood thinners, but amyloid clots, generally speaking, are not going to be affected by blood thinners. So let's see what Dr. Mackus has to say. First you'll hear Tish talk.
What's the level of response you would say with what you've witnessed, with the deception, the lies, the level of malevolence pushing these jabs? Would you say it's that bad?
I usually say that there is definitely intent to harm people.
Mm-hmm.
There's no question about that. You know, this is not incompetence. This is not, oops, we didn't know. Please give us amnesty because we had no idea what we were doing. No, there was absolutely intent to harm. The only, you know, the only question is to what degree, right? And so I don't like to use the term depopulation, but I would say that there was certainly, well, in the early stages of the pandemic, there was certainly deliberate deaths, or how would I put it? I mean, people were being killed deliberately to drive up the numbers, of COVID deaths or alleged COVID deaths.
Mm-hmm.
This was in long-term care home settings, especially where people were just outright euthanized,
murdered.
And certainly they were also murdered in hospitals by the hundreds of thousands with remdesivir. I don't know that he mentions that one, but that was a key way to murder people early on.
And so that was the purpose of that was to drive up the deaths, to scare the population enough to accept the genetic therapies, the mRNA vaccines, all types of vaccines, really, because they gave people the illusion of choice.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the choice between poison A and poison B.
Mm-hmm.
Because all of the COVID vaccines, including Novavax,
mm-hmm.
Have very serious problems. and very serious health effects. And so I think, you know, the way I look at it is that there was definitely intent to kill, and there's been a much broader intent to harm and probably disable large portions of the population. And it seems that all of the COVID vaccine injuries that we are seeing now in larger numbers, the cardiac injuries, the blood clots, and the cancers, they already have the drugs, new drugs ready to go to treat all of those treatments. So, you know, I've recently done a deep dive into Eliquis, which is a blood thinner that is sold by Pfizer and Bristol Myers Squibb. And Eliquis is the sixth best-selling drug in the world. It's brought in, I think, $18 billion in revenue last year, climbing significantly every single year. And so now, of course, you've got vaccinated people are coming down with all kinds of blood clots in their legs, blood clots in their lungs, pulmonary emboli, strokes.
Yes.
And they're put on Eliquis. They're put on this expensive, and it's an expensive drug.
Yes.
That is now the number six best-selling drug in the world, considering that, you know, among the top best-selling drugs are the Pfizer vaccine, the Moderna vaccine, and Paxlovid. Well, you've got a blood thinner right there. And then in the top six, you know, you've got one of these cancer treatments in there as well. And then I believe there's also like a cardiomyopathy drug as well.
Okay. Big money. Follow the money.
Well, that I think he's referring to the cardiomyopathy drug. It's also for amyloidosis of the heart. Probably could be used for amyloidosis in general, maybe. That's the one. It's Vyndaqel or Vyndamax. And it's $250,000 a year.
I'm sorry.
And that was recently approved, I think, in December 2021.
Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah. It's all planned out on the big board, even though it's contained in a computer on a big flat-screen TV. It's all planned. There's nothing left to chance here. All by the plan.
So I just wonder when, you know, enough people are going to catch on to just, you know, the game.
It's too late. In my view, I'm not speaking for you. It's too late.
Well, you may be right.
They've got 6+ billion injections into the 8 billion people on the planet. Let me just rephrase that. 6+ billion people have been injected with one or more injections on the planet. So I think they're letting the truth out now. I think that they've lightened up on people because they've already achieved what they set out to do.
Exactly.
And then letting shedding pick up a lot of the loose ends. So, and I know some of you don't like the idea of modifying your lifestyle if you're unvaxxed. You don't want to have to steer clear of people or even think about it. I get that. That's human nature. But the facts are the facts. And we try here to bring you only reality, if not factual reality, as much reality as we can acquire. And it's not easy. It's not fun to trod these paths. But damn it, somebody's got to do it. It's not pine needle tea or a detox bath with borax that's going to save you. You're in real big problems.
So far we can't say for sure that anything in terms of prevention is working very well. I've seen a lot of reports where people have said that they've taken all these different protocols, done everything right, and yet they're still affected by it, in some cases needing, medical attention for clotting. You know, it may get to the point where you're taking anticoagulants for the rest of your life.
And if you have amyloid clotting at the capillary level and up, it's not going to do you much good in most cases. Just not.
Right.
Okay, let's jump forward here. Dr. Mackus, it's a short clip. He's going to mention something that we've talked about, how many people, and I keep saying this, whenever you go out, you're going to see people who are still able to get out, if not work, and they look rather normal. but they're suffering in silence. They have injuries. It's not a pretty thing to think about. So here we go.
The Tight Suddenly group that had 300,000 people, and it was shut down several times. Mm-hmm. So there's been efforts to obviously silence those who've been injured.
Well, and so even more, I mean, these people suffering, I watched a bunch of nurses on Highwire, and they said their peer group was shaming them. Like, yeah. Not only are you suffering, but your peer group, because of the level of indoctrination, the word vaccine's like a magic spell. And they shame them. And so, like, you know, that there's record not only injuries, but record suicides. Because people are so isolated and alone and suffering in silence, and they don't have a support group. I mean, it's just tragedy on every side.
Absolutely. And but that, you know, gives you a bit of at least an idea of the scale. And then from Ed Dowd's data, it looks like about 1 to 2% have been permanently disabled. So that's when the numbers start you know, getting quite big, because, you know, this is permanently disabled means you're out of the workforce, right?
Forever.
And we see these numbers, and people have to be, you know, very attentive when numbers do come out, because numbers do come out in the mainstream media. Now,
okay, I got to stop there. We have a lot of things, but Ed Dowd, D-O-W-D, look him up on whichever your favorite video service is, and you can see some of his work with stats and numbers. All right. Let's see. Next up. This is really important. This gets into another topic that we've spent not enough time on, perhaps, but some would say maybe too much. Well, you can't, really. But this is about a 7-minute piece. And in the middle, Tisch brings up another question about personality changes, and he wasn't finished with what he was saying about miscarriages and stillbirths and other horrors, and then post-birth mother deaths, which are staggering. So he's going to finish after her question. So let me move this up. Okay, here we go.
Maternal mortality. Now, Dr. James Thorpe, who is a very experienced obstetrician in the United States, is working on this information, and he says the numbers are horrific. But, you know, there's been a huge spike in miscarriages, in stillbirths, in infant mortality, and maternal mortality. Now, you see, you know, one of the most terrible things in this pandemic is that they've told pregnant women that these vaccines are safe throughout pregnancy, which is absolute insanity. You know, I can pull up right now dozens of cases from VAERS of congenital malformations. When women take this vaccine in the first trimester, there are congenital malformations of the brain, of the heart, of the limbs, and these are not compatible with life. So these will end up basically being miscarriages. And that's how it gets swept under the rug.
Do you have any knowledge? I interviewed someone who worked in the funeral home business, and they said there was just a flood of infant deaths. They'd never seen anything like it in all their years. And then all of a sudden it stopped. And then they were told that what was being introduced at hospitals was that when an infant died, they were told that they would take care of it in the hospital. So they literally had their own crematorium or some sort of way. But it wasn't that the babies were then being taken care of in the hospital to keep it on the low. It was just.
We need to ask Nurse Anne about this, if she's seeing that. And these big hospitals she works in.
Mm-hmm. So evil. Can you confirm if that might be true, or if that's...
You know, I've heard this as well. And again, I can't give you a concrete, you know, example of this. This is where we're really going to need whistleblowers, because areas I can tell you right now, there's certain things that I don't get attacked on. I can talk about myocarditis till I'm blue in the face. That's okay, right? I can talk about blood clots, no problem. Nobody cares, right? The moment I start talking about anything to do with like pregnant women and infants, like stillbirths or miscarriages, the moment I talk about cancer and the moment I talk about suicide, that's when I get the death threats and the attacks. Oh, so that tells you what they don't want people to know. They don't care about the myocarditis, blood clot, because they've already told people, yeah, it causes it. You know, it's rare, it's mild. Don't worry about it, right? And then when you die, well, too bad, right? No one's gonna do anything for you. So they're not worried about those kinds of side effects. Even the autoimmune diseases and you know the immune issues. They're like, well, the immune system is too complicated for most people to grasp. And so when I talk about immune system damage. And then someone says, well, how's the immune system damaged? Well, it's extremely complicated. The way the mRNA vaccines were, the way the mRNA was modified with a pseudouridine, which then, you know, alters the T cell signaling, and you've got a complete different mix of cytokines and chemokines in the body, and that launches all kinds of inflammatory processes and so on, like the myocarditis. Well, you lose people. People don't understand that.
They don't even understand antibody enhancement dependence.
Yeah, so Big Pharma doesn't care if you talk about these kinds of things.
No.
Right? But it's the things that they hate is the stillbirths, fertility issues, pregnant women dying, cancer, and suicide risk because of the neurological accumulation and of the lipid nanoparticles and the injury. The lipid nanoparticles cross the blood-brain barrier. They start causing all kinds of, you know, inflammatory issues in the brain. And part of that, those neurological injuries are not just the physical ones like, you know, the loss of sight, hearing, tinnitus, Bell's palsy, and all kinds of, you know, multiple sclerosis and so on. But there's also mental health impact as well, and mental health changes. And so, which increases your risk of suicide. So that's, again, something that's forbidden to talk about.
Can you comment before we move on? I'm sorry to interject. It's just there's a lot of people. I mean, you have so much knowledge. People want to know because they have, you know, in the loosely free health freedom community that I'm part of, you're part of too here in Canada, and all these freedom groups that are awake to this, they've noticed changes in personality with either like a friend or a loved one or a former friend or whatever. Someone who took the shot is now highly charged, angry, irritable, like there's this negative change in their personality. It's always negative.
Yeah. I'll just finish up the because I didn't finish up in terms of the what happens in pregnancy. So in the first trimester you get congenital malformations. What's interesting as I was digging through the VAERS system, when you take the vaccine in the second trimester or third trimester, what usually happens is the fetus stops growing within 24 hours. And you will notice that in these reports, what they do is the pregnant woman will have an ultrasound a week or two later. And then on the ultrasound, they can tell by the size of the fetus, they'll be like, well, the fetus stopped growing on such and such date. It's like, oh, well, I had the vaccine the day or two before. And so what happens probably is that, you know, there's compromise to the blood flow to the fetus. There may be infarcts in the placenta. They're finding, you know, placentas with all kinds of infarcts and abnormalities, blood vessel abnormalities, because these lipid nanoparticles easily cross the placenta into the fetus, right?
Yes.
And so, and a lot of these cases, again, they end up as miscarriages or stillbirths. And so that gets buried. That just ends up being a random misfortune. Right.
Oh.
And so there's tremendous effort to really suppress any information about, well, how many miscarriages, how many stillbirths, like you said, you know, fetal demise. We have pregnant women who are getting cardiac arrests during pregnancy. We have pregnant women who are dying at increased numbers during delivery with all kinds of complications, usually hematological complications. And then we have pregnant women who are dying shortly after delivery in the postpartum period. Most of these deaths are pulmonary emboli, blood clots. Some of them are turbo cancers. And so, you know, a pregnant woman will develop a turbo cancer during pregnancy. But because these cancers grow so rapidly, by the time, you know, they initiate treatment and so on, sometimes they wait for a baby to get to a certain maturity so that, you know, the baby has a good chance when they're born, then they start treatment, you know, and in the past, there was no problem waiting because the cancers evolved slowly. These cancers evolve so quickly that these women end up dying and the baby is a few months old. So, you know, you have all these orphaned babies that are a few months old because their mother has died. So maternal mortality is up. And, you know, I don't have the numbers on this because it's extremely difficult to get numbers.
Right.
But, this is not 10 or 20%. This is going to be, you know, on the order of 100%, 200%. These are going to be big numbers.
Wow.
And this is the problem. And they keep telling pregnant women that these lipid nanoparticle mRNA technology, that it's safe in pregnancy, and it absolutely is not.
But how can they not see the, people don't understand why they can't see, it's so blatantly obvious, the level of harm. It's not small, it's massive.
Because the information doesn't get out. And so the hospital will do everything possible to make sure this information doesn't get out. So if you have a whistleblower, so I believe there were some whistleblowers in Vancouver. I think it was Lionsgate Hospital, which reported some staggering number of stillbirths within a very short period of time. Those people were fired. Those people were silenced. They were threatened. The information doesn't get out because if you want to get this information out, you have to be ready to lose everything.
But that's the only way forward, isn't it, for all of us?
That's the only way forward.
And people don't realize that. We can't stay silent anymore.
And the way I look at it is, it's hard to have any kind of pity on a healthcare worker who stayed silent throughout all.
This is important. This is his view as a doctor now. It's hard to have pity on a healthcare worker.
Because,
and again,
a lot of them are dying, a lot of them are being injured, and it is tragic, and I don't want that for anybody. However, if you were silent during the last 3 years,
you're contributing to genocide.
You basically were part of the problem. You were basically on the side of people who were inflicting these injuries and deaths.
Absolutely.
So you carry that responsibility as any kind of healthcare provider, right?
Yes. Well, I think it extends beyond healthcare because every institution we know is captured. Our media is. So it's up to us, the people, to bring the information to the public to stop this, because otherwise it will continue and will harm us all. I mean, if they have the WHO amendments, I interviewed James Raguski as well, and then the passport, all the things that they want to set up, it'll be too late. We really have to get it now.
I agree. I mean, you can't sit on the fence on this because this will only keep escalating. Now, you've asked about the,
Okay. We'll have to stop there for this visit. We'll be back on Friday and finish this up. But this is really very grim. And the only thing I wish is that they wouldn't talk about this as a vaccine or a vaccination or even gene therapy. It needs to be hauled out from under the black, dirty rock it is hiding under, as a satanically created biological weapon of death and suffering and misery and horror. It is the most inhuman way to sentence hundreds of millions and billions of people to an early death. It has so many different ways of taking people down.
I agree. Sometimes I read these sagas in these groups, and it brings tears to my eyes. Because in many cases, these people, their families have turned their backs on them. They're tired of hearing about it. They think they're making it up.
Or they've spent their retirements on it, disorders.
Sometimes that, too. They've lost their jobs. They've lost their friends, and really all they have is these support groups now where they can be at least validated. There doesn't seem to be a lot of help. There's just palliative care, basically. If you're lucky.
Or comfort care.
And suicide.
Care.
comfort care. Well, suicide, the topic of suicide comes up frequently.
Well, you've read a number of them to me. I get it.
Yeah.
Well, these people are just absolutely worn out, and they have no one to turn to except these groups. Thank God they're there. It's very sad. I just think about families and many of them care very much about their vax injured members, and they'll do anything they can for them. But others just want to get on with their life and not to be bothered with us. They get tired of it. I'm tired of you complaining all the time. They don't say that. Well, I hope not. But it is grueling.
Yeah, it's true. They are suffering in silence. And a lot of times they're afraid to say anything because they've been stigmatized or just ostracized for saying negative things about the vax or implying negative things.
Remember, in nature, if you're a herd animal, and we are a herd animal, the herd animals who are injured try like hell to hide that injury and keep right up with the pack, because the pack will turn on them and leave them behind.
Yeah,
that too.
Was reading a thread where a couple, maybe two or three of these injured people were just going back and forth and describing their suffering because they knew they could share that amongst each others. And then I just got curious, so I checked out their Facebook profiles, what they shared publicly anyway. And there was no indication that they were not making it public, at least on their Facebook page, that they had any of these problems. And I had to check twice, do I have the right person? So they are concealing a lot of their suffering.
I get that feeling often. A few times I do go out, and I'm fortunate to work at home. So are you, and some of you listening are. Many aren't. You have to go out and work to survive, and you have to work around the vaxxed. And that's a tough one for us. We understand. There's only so much we can do. I'm trying to give you the facts with which to make your decision to at least minimize your exposure is what we're really
about. You can't. I mean, there were people that chose to leave their job because they just were not going to put their health on the line. If you don't have your health, what do you have?
Nothing.
Really?
Nothing.
And the way things are going, the job's going to go away anyway.
All too true. And many have. How many small businesses went away in a year or two? Was it 5 million? I can't even remember. It was a huge number. This is what made this country great. Individual enterprise, right?
Right.
Entrepreneurism. No more.
Yeah.
No more.
Well,
taken
not
all
people,
that away.
Stand up and push back on some of this. Otherwise, it just keeps going.
Yeah, it's now got its own impetus. It's going to be very difficult. Okay, great job. Thank you. We'll talk on next time,
Friday.
And I'll see you here on Friday. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Jeff. Good night, everyone.
We'll be right back. Hold on.